Hey Simo, go on. Sorry, you can say you know what. Or,
oh, sorry, I thought
sorry. Yeah,
I didn't realise that was the start. I thought you were going to say something else.
Hey Simo,
what's that, GP?
What has this guy got to do with property and the Southwest?
My tale begins after I had once again attempted to murder Bart. I needed a fresh start. But where?
You've got me there. I have no idea.
The Right Move.
The property podcast with
Andrew Simmons and JP.
Hiya, how you doing? We are the property podcast. Simo, I'm painfully aware that I've probably had a quieter January than you so far. What has been going wrong in the world of Simo?
The world of Simo. Well, do you know what, JP? It's been really interesting, just in the general, in the property market. Yeah. It's been quite quiet for me. One end of the spectrum has been really quiet, and the other end, really busy. But whilst it's been quiet in one office, we've had the slight issue of a flood. Well, when I say flood, a water leak from a pipe above, that has literally come running on down through. Sadly, we've been flooded out of our offices in North Somerset, and everybody's working from home, which is fantastic because now we have technology that enables us to do that, pick up and plug in, as it were. But yes, slightly frustrating. I shan't name any names, but the loss adjusters are somewhat taking the proverbial
the Michael
leak.
Let me just do that. The loss adjusters.
Yes, that's the one. And you know, they've told me that they won't be coming for 3 weeks. Mm. But anyway, never mind. Yeah. We're up and running. I have a smile on my face as ever. And it's been an interesting. We've probably been in this situation for a week now as we record this.
Please, Simo, tell me that it was water, as in clean water, and not. It wasn't a flood of sewage water.
It was a header tank that burst or that cracked. You know, frankly, anybody could have that problem. Obviously, when a header tank bursts, the water keeps flowing, just like turning a tap. So it was running and running and running until somebody could effectively go in and turn it off, which was a good few hours.
Well,
so there we are.
As long as nobody caught a crab, that's a good thing. And I hope it gets fixed soon. So here is a quick headline of what we're covering in the episode. Simo, sustainable homes.
Yep, really key point, isn't it? Now everybody is looking for sustainable homes. And we've got Adam from WeLink Homes coming on shortly.
We've also a Hollywood exclusive. Well, I say Hollywood via the Southwest. A Hollywood A-lister, a big star, and a purchase in Portishead. And let's just say at this stage, it's someone who's been after Bart from The Simpsons for a long, long time.
And then we're off to Spain. We're off to sunny Spain. And we'll talk about something that's happening in the Balearics, really. They are talking about not allowing us Brits to buy homes.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. And I know you can speak, just for a change, but you can speak with some real authority on that. We'll cover that very shortly. And also, Charlie Lambdin. Now he's built up this reputation as the Martin Lewis of property. So Charlie will be here with Charlie Says. And there's kind of two sides to what he's talking about. But I'll say no more at this stage. That is all yet to come.
Selling, buying, investing. Are you making the right move?
Now, our green credentials, Simo, well, that of the podcast, are not too bad, actually. You know, we've kind of stuck a toe in this subject, sort of dipped a toe in it. But we're going to really extend that and go for it in this particular episode, aren't we?
you know, it's all about green, really. We're starting to realize that homes with green credentials are becoming more the home of choice for any buyer, whether that's something with a solar panel on the roof or whether that's something with a an air source heat pump. I'm going to say solar. Do bear in mind, I will caveat the fact that it really is important that solar is owned by the property, not leased. We are coming and stuck in certain areas where the good old lease panels that were plastered on roofs throughout the early 2000s are now becoming a bit of a pain in the proverbial when it comes to legals. But that aside, you know, green credentials are important. But, you know, the interesting thing about WeLink that we're going to be talking to in a second, it's not just about green, though, is it? It's all about tolerances and, you know, making sure it's delivered perfectly to site.
Yeah, and there's, as Adam will explain in a second, so I won't steal his thunder, but there's this very structured, intricate process in a factory, in Castleford as it goes. What it means is that, you know, that house on that new estate will spring up in, well, roughly half the time of a, if you like, a standard house. And there's a little bit of that kind of Huff House type ethos to it. But I will say no more at this stage.
Well, I know what it's like to receive a caravan that's been built in a factory and they don't stay dry forever.
Well, let's turn that on its head, because this is real precision stuff. I mean, the fact that we've got Adam on this sec is thanks to you, and thanks to Toby from Savills on TikTok.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then, do you know what? My kids are really like, go on, Dad, you've got to go on TikTok. You're on TikTok. Do you want to do this? Like, what the... is TikTok. Well, anyway, because my eldest Charlie uses TikTok, I've had to make sure I monitor some of the things that he views. So I have a TikTok account. I don't post anything. I just look. But obviously what happens there is that some, you know, you certain things come along and you flick through and you see your sort of interests pop up. Sometimes they get that slightly wrong. But, you know, this one was correct on property. And there was Toby wandering around a building site saying, this is how the future of building is. So that's how we managed to track down Adam.
Shall we bring him on?
Yeah, let's do that.
I have to say that social media is clearly working for you chaps, because WeLink Homes came to our attention via TikTok.
Yeah, I know it's unusual for me in particular. It's not my bag, but I do have access to TikTok, but I've never done one. So that was all really thanks to our very capable colleague at Savills, Toby Greenhow, who he took it upon himself to do a podcast. I think it looked like he did it in one take as well, which is quite impressive.
Yes, yeah.
And... in fact, strangely enough, that was up on our scheme in near Ely, a place called Wychford. And a few days before, he'd actually been in a Hollywood movie as an extra. So I think he a Bradley Cooper movie that was being filmed in Ely.
That's
so
great.
Interesting that he's obviously got another career beckoning. I'll have to be his agent, I think.
Yeah, other strings to his bow. Well, he was clearly, like you say, one take wonder, very capable on camera. So there'll be people on national television, at ITV and the BBC quaking in their boots, I dare say.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, so Toby says, doesn't he, on that TikTok, that on the outside there's not really any kind of major indication that your homes are as different as they actually are, under the skin, as it were. Can you describe what lies beneath that fairly sort of traditional, that sort of typical look?
I can. And it actually probably takes us back to our initial kind of conception, which was, we you know, just as a, to put you in the picture, we're part of a larger group, WeLink Group, who do utility scale solar installations across Europe and other parts of the world. In, you know, they've done over a gigawatt of energy projects through solar. And they've been established some years, 15 years maybe, perhaps. And the owner, Barry O'Neill, decided that as an innovator, he would want to get into the residential space to do something a bit different, upset the apple cart, and actually move towards a greener, more environmentally friendly way of doing things, which would definitely involve off-site manufacture. So he gathered a group of people who've been in the industry for many years, myself included, and our chief exec, David Ritchie, who is formerly chief exec of Bovis, 10, 15 years or so. And we've created a system of build which incorporates a light gauge steel frame. And we sought to do that in a factory offsite. We've got a factory up in Castleford, run by a very capable individual, Andrew Turnbull, who's been in the offsite site sector for some years, but his background's automotive industry. So with his expertise and our own expertise, we created a system which needed to be offsite. We chose a system which would need to be panelized, because that gives greater flexibility in the size and scale of housing project, of houses that you can build. They don't have to be boxes of a certain size that fit in a wagon. Ours can be 12, 14 meters long. You know, the length of a panel probably is the limiting factor, but that's quite a long panel. So you can use that as a front or as a side. So really the size of house isn't really a restriction. That therefore gave us the capability to design something that wasn't just typically small box, but could be quite flexible. And we chose to use an architectural vernacular for the location. So it is flexible. We can design it to look really however we want. It could have looked far more contemporary. But I think when you're trying to bring the public along with you and they're familiar with the more traditional house style, we felt that if we are also introducing more innovative construction techniques, for our first projects to have them look like traditional houses was probably the best way forward, bearing in mind that the industry is selling a few hundred thousand of these type things every year. Yeah. They've got to be doing something right. And for us, an important material on the outside was brick, because I think the general public and the planning teams around the nation tend to prefer and warm to a brick finish. So the makeup of our structure itself, that panel, at the heart of it lies a 100 mil wide light gauge steel frame, galvanized, within which we incorporate mineral wool, so 100 mil of mineral wool. The light gauge steel frame is then built up with, on top of that, there is an OSB board, 18 mil, which creates some rigidity to the frame and provides a backer for us to put a further 120 mil of solid PIR in insulation, which fixes directly onto that OSB board. The whole thing is then wrapped tight, breather membrane around, properly folded, lapped and sealed in controlled environments in the factory, which I'll explain a bit more. There's a 15 mil cavity, which is a requirement of NHBC. And then the finish on the external is a 20 mil brick on a backing board with ribs on, so we can adhere the bricks to that backing board and then provide a finishing mortar joint.
So, Adam, it sounds like you're almost having a sort of a soft launch, you know, guiding buyers gently by the hand and going for kind of a mainstream aesthetic, because, you know, we're a pretty conservative bunch.
I mean, and also, you know, we're not just building for ourselves. Yeah, you know, yeah. The aim is for us to be a house builder. We're delivering our own schemes at the moment, but it's very much part of our psyche to be involved in delivering for others. And we are indeed speaking to other developers and have agreed deals with other developers to provide superstructure, finished superstructure externally, bricks, windows, etc., for them to finish off internally, or indeed for us to do the whole thing. And with us doing very little marketing so far, other than obviously Toby's very capable TikTok, we are only just really on that journey, and we're starting to get quite a lot of interest. So
that's great.
It's quite an exciting future for us.
That's excellent, wonderful to hear, especially, you know, something that's UK based. Adam, it really is. And I think I know I mentioned this to you on an email that we've probably got Kevin and Grand Designs to thank for people's familiarity with the Hofhaus concept.
Yes. Yeah.
Any kind of, you know, similarities or comparisons? I'm thinking, I suppose, particularly.
Well, probably, you know, absolutely, there is. I mean, over 20 years ago, I went off to Sweden to have a look at some off-site manufactured housing. Mm-hmm. So it was certainly always something that was in my mindset. And when this opportunity came along, I jumped at it, because it's all about timing. Huffhaus obviously came through many years ago, but in Germany, I think the regulation and the requirement to have a very warm, insulated, modern system-built house was obviously, they were there well before us, and regulation helped. And really, what's pushed us into the situation we're in is a desperate need to do something different. In our mind, that's what we really wanted to do, to take some of those cues from the likes of Huffhaus and other system builds across Europe, where it's much colder, and with a view that obviously as a green energy business at heart, it was a given that this was eventually going to come. And what the big change really has been regulation. Up until now, developers have been making a good job and decent money out of doing it the old way, so no real need to change. But now, with building regulations tightening significantly, with the new Part L building regs now in force, so this year, and obviously the Future Homes Standard coming in, we've by choice have already chosen to surpass Future Homes Standard as we perceive it to be. It's not out yet, but that is the key is no gas to the house, so it's electric only, PV energy by choice, which we've put on there, and highly insulated, such that we can achieve very impressive air permeability testing, which is needing to be done every house now. So we surpass even what we perceive Future Home Standard to be in 2025. So that was important to us. And really, the Huffhaus is, you know, was a forerunner to this panelized type system, very highly insulated, that you can erect extremely quickly. Obviously, we haven't gone with exactly that system, but I think the concept is very much at the heart of what we're doing.
So, you know, we Link have a right first time ethos. Sometimes a family will move into a new house put up by an established builder and come across a list as long as your arm of issues. But you really are moving away from that.
We are, and really that's thanks to Andy, who, from an automotive perspective, doesn't really understand the concept of we'll get it quite right, but not perfect.
Yeah.
And he said if you did that in the car industry, you'd go out of business. So we want to take that same ethos, and the factory is a production line where we layer up. Every wall is, well, the ones that we do are 302 mil, so still fairly slender. Mm. Because we can achieve the thermal performance within that range, and that's from plasterboard through to external finish. We layer up in controlled environment, and we're able to provide over 500 quality control points at each stage. So it goes from station to station, as you'd imagine, on a roller kind of conveyor, and it's layered up and checked at every point. And it's done in the dry at ergonomic heights. And each individual manual laborer within the factory at each station that they're working at is only presented with the right tools and the right equipment to do that particular job. Mm. It's very much a, I suppose, paint by numbers. So he's presented with the materials just in time, just in sequence behind him. And he will, if he's, say, applying the OSB boarding, that comes pre-cut, numbered, serial coded. So he knows, and with it, he has a plan, and he will know, put board one in position A, put board two in position B, and fix it using only the fixings you've got with only the tool you've got.
Yeah.
So he's very much a do that and then move on to the next cycle. There's a one-hour tack cycle. So each station is around about an hour to layer up. The panel is then flipped into the vertical and moved by electronic crane through to a finishing station, where the external cladding is put onto the brickwork, is done, the mortar's done, and from the other side, the doors, windows, insulations, additional insulation is put in. It's very much an environment where we can do it without being kneeling down in the mud in a field, and you can get the air tightness, the quality, and the square and level quality that you need to build a good house.
It's fascinating, so impressive. I assume as well, though, that Adam, Dev, you know, being at the vanguard of anything quite often has its challenges. Have there been some?
There have been multiple challenges, and actually most of it is bringing along the regulators.
Yeah.
You know, they we need to get mortgages on the houses. We need to be able to provide an NHBC warranty. And that's something that the NHBC have been grappling with over the years with new systems coming in. And it's not straightforward to get your approvals through that process. So it's taken us a long time, but we've worked very well with the NHBC to get onto their NHBC accepts scheme, which means that everything that's done in the factory, which has already been audited by BOPAS as well, gives us the ability to bring a panel to site and then erect it with the NHBC's blessing. At the moment, that panel that we bring to site is an open panel, so you can see the structure. When our guys have brought it to site and erected the house in a day, if you're walking through the front door, you can see the open panel, you can see the light gauge steel frame, the insulation. So the NHBC like that because they can then inspect in a very traditional way. And doing it bit by bit is important to bring everyone along with us, but certainly it's our ambition to move then the electric first fix, plumbing first fix into the factory and put a plasterboard on it as well. Right. But by the time you then close the panel, you need to make sure that your insurer, i.e. the NHBC, are happy that everything that they can inspect, that, you know, they take it as read that it's all been done properly in the factory.
And you're very much about challenging the status quo of the housing sector and how we view it.
It does. I mean, one of the things that the industry is really struggling with, and has been ever since I've been in the industry, 30 odd years, is labour, skilled labour on site. We can reduce the reliance on those skilled trades, and you know, we still need some skilled trades on site to actually do substructures, etc. But getting hold of people is not easy. So to move a lot of that superstructure build into a factory environment where we can use, you know, often individuals from the job centre who we train to do a job and to do it well and to become very, very proficient at a specific role. And then obviously they get trained on different parts of the building in the factory so that it remains interesting and they can build up their knowledge.
Adam, I don't want to baffle people listening to this too much with sort of stacks and stacks of details, but when you look at energy performance certification on the average home in this country, it really is very mediocre, if not poor, nothing to write home about. But yet a typical Wheelink home is A-rated, isn't it? So what does
it
that
is.
Mean?
So every house that we're building at present on our sites is A-rated, and we took that choice to make sure it is A-rated. So that means, in particular, thermal performance is very, very important to achieve that. So it's fabric first, which is probably a terminology which the general public hasn't necessarily been familiar with, but certainly fabric first is very much something which the industry understands. And we surpass in our thermal performance what Future Home Standard is anticipated to be. So for those with a bit more of a technical understanding, the air permeability of our tape, which is one that's quite difficult to achieve, we come down from 10 meters cubed per hour per meter squared, which was the previous building regs, down to 8 now. Future Home Standard looks like it'd be 5. We're already 3 and below. We ought to be much less than 3 by the time we've refined our system. So we're well beyond what's needed. And that thermal performance and overall accuracy of build gives us the opportunity to reduce the energy requirements for the house. And we are somewhere around 70% less carbon required, less energy required to run our houses compared to other new build product. So it is significantly less kilowatt hours. And that research is still ongoing, but we are confident that we are significantly below the norm, which gives us the A rating now. Our A rating will just get better as the grid decarbonizes, because we do run off electric with the assistance of PV, but some electric is drawn to the grid. So if you go with green electric, then of course your EPC rating in theory is even higher.
Now, is there enough media awareness of the strides Wheelink are making?
No, it's not really. I think there's a perception that maybe offsite is still a little bit stigmatized by what had happened in the post-war period, just after the war, and it's not necessarily seen as solid, in inverted commas. You know, I don't know what bit of solid you necessarily need. Ours perform, you know, we could go to the light gauge steel frame is good for 11 stories. You know, it's a strong system. It's one of the lightest and strongest materials that builders could use. So it's very solid, very strong, and thermally efficient. So I don't know what's not to like there. So I think it's to bring, I think now that people can go into our show homes at Wychford and a scheme in Pershore, once they can go in and have a look at what they, what we produce, a good reaction usually is, it's like a house. Yeah. It's just a well-built house. It's level.
Yeah.
You can tell it's warm. Yeah. And it doesn't offend the eye. It's a straightforward looking traditional house, but performing very differently.
Thanks a lot, Adam. Yeah, it's been great having you on. And yeah, all the best.
Thanks a lot.
Wherever you get your podcasts, you're with The Right Move. And so now we're going to hear from Charlie Lambden on this episode's Charlie Says.
Charlie Says.
2 points today. The standoff that we're seeing in a lot of places between buyers and sellers. Objectively and impartially, I think that a lot of sellers are reluctant to accept the reality that mortgage lending and the increase in interest rates has led to a severe drop in the amount that borrowers can borrow. And so it's not that buyers don't want to pay the asking prices for some of the overpriced homes, it's that they no longer can because the funding just is no longer available. And so it's just a question of time. It's a waiting game, I think, for sellers to, one at a time, they're starting to realise it. I think there's going to be a bit of a sort of cascade of sellers realising it at some point when the news really gets out in the mainstream media. But if you are needing to sell, as opposed to thinking of or considering selling, if you're needing to sell, I would urge anybody to get ahead of the market. The sooner you get ahead of the market, the sooner you'll get your property sold at what's going to be the best available price, because prices are going to keep falling for a while. On the topic of green homes, I think that there is a wonderful opportunity if a really well-designed and well-built, high-quality green home, especially with the uncertainty of energy prices, there's going to be a real premium on truly economical, environmentally friendly homes that are built. I also think that even older homes that have got better energy ratings are seeing better price retention during the falls, because of course energy bills have become one of the biggest outgoings for everybody. So a lot of older properties now are seeing energy bills rising to unimaginable levels, and that's just going to really hit their resale value. So I think the developers who have been building really good quality greenhouses, I worry there's a caveat, which is just make sure that you're not going to be plagued with snagging issues in high-tech new homes. Make sure there's a proper warranty in place. But where there is, where it's been done well to a high standard, I think that there's a lot to be said for reducing your energy cost as well as helping along the way with the planet.
You're with The Right Move. Subscribe to us now on all major podcast apps.
That is excellent. Thank you, as ever, to the, I can't stop saying this now, Simma, the Martin Lewis of property. It's definitely going to stick now. And also, like you, he's had stuff appear in the national newspapers. The broadsheets now has Mr. Lambden. So thank you
to
Charlie.
He's catching me up.
Yeah, he is. You ought to look over your shoulder. So, yeah, thank you, Charlie, for that. And just a word on that sort of, I suppose, the first half of what he was saying, Simo.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've had it recently where vendor and buyer are two, they're apart. I mean, you know, I've had an interesting one which was just $5,000. You know, and vendor refused to budge. Buyer decided that was their top; they wouldn't budge. But you know, the buyer really wanted the property, so they found themselves another couple of grand, and the vendor said, "Yeah, okay, fine, we'll sort that." But that was after a week of a Mexican standoff. So you know, quite a difficult one to negotiate and plan with that one, really.
Yeah. Ooh, wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. Although you know, the A370 doesn't make that ease of a cowboy saloon.
No, I can see where it wouldn't really work. Okay.
But also the point that Charlie there makes about snags and things like that with new builds. Yeah, I think, you know, obviously we've spoken as well earlier on to Adam, and you know, different. Yeah, there are house builders that have huge snagging problems, but you know what we're trying to discuss today is the fact that WeLink have this zero tolerance setup, so it's the right first time, and make sure that they don't have so many snags. Time will tell with that, of course, because you know the whole WeLink setup is very new, and you know hopefully they'll be going great guns and be the first there to get it right.
Yeah,
and create themselves a you know a niche.
Fantastic story, and a UK based one. So you know what more can you ask for? All right, so thank you for that. Now. You're familiar with Frasier, yeah, Simo?
Yeah.
What about if you're just ambling around Portishead, Bristol and stuff, and you ran into the man himself? That'd be an impressive Hollywood spot, don't you think?
Yeah, well, you'd expect there'd be a gold star on the suspension bridge for that.
Well, we know that he, in this case, Kelsey Grammer, no less, has been in various restaurants, including being papped in a curry house, wasn't he?
Yeah, apparently so. But he seems to prefer poppadoms, apparently, to the curry. I also hear that he's been spotted in San Carlo.
Yeah, and the reason is about to become clear. Let's hear from Kelsey Grammer.
Well, I am married to a young woman named Kate Walsh. Now, what is it? Kate Nay Walsh. Now Kate Grammer. But she's the daughter of a fellow named Alan Walsh and Suze Walsh. We go into Bristol a bit, and we've been to San Carlo, the restaurant. We're actually in the business of at this point of shopping a show for, we think, maybe Channel 4 that's going to go check out restaurants and gastronomy around the provinces of England rather than London. So it's sort of what's outside of London that's particularly good. So we're working on that right now.
Yeah, let's give our thanks to BBC Radio Bristol for the audio clip there. He was chatting to one of their presenters. So Hollywood royalty then, Simo, buys a property in Portishead.
Well, exactly. I hope they've got a helicopter to get in and out because that one road in, one road out doesn't really help Portishead. But you know the train line is coming, we hear as well.
Yeah.
So you know it's that will be good. That'll help ease the traffic.
Oh, and we did. I won't say who it is because obvious reasons, etc. Professional confidentiality. But we did try and get somebody lined up to come on and talk about the train line. But let me just say it was the double of Kelly from the Stereophonics.
We know who you're talking about.
His diary wouldn't allow it, and nor would the people in positions of comms and marketing power. But yeah, the thing is, going back to this house that Kelsey and his wife have purchased in Portishead, it's ironic, isn't it? Because I think actually that people seem to be more interested in the area, in his wife's connection to the footy.
Well, you know, it depends on which side of the river you're going. Is it the red or the blue side? But I think in her case, it's the red side. I think originally, didn't she grow up in Portishead, from what I've heard, or around the area?
Yeah.
And they're really keen to set some roots. And yeah, it'd be interesting. You know, don't underestimate Bristol. It's a place where you know we do attract a host of people that are of celebrity levels.
Yeah.
So you know we do see that around. Places on the outskirts are a little bit more gives them the privacy that they need.
Yeah. Well, warm welcome, Kelsey, and the mango chutney is on us with Simo and JP. It's The Right Move, the property podcast. I don't know what the Spanish for this is, Simo. Fed up with drowning in people. I have to stick it through Google Translate. Spain calls to limit British property ownership. What's occurring here?
Well, it's a sad, sad state of affairs, really, isn't it? You know, the Spanish are... I mean, this is specifically relating to a town in Mallorca, who they really want to limit out of towners essentially buying property. Now, you know, I have a fair experience, let's call it, on the Spanish property market, and have been involved in that. And the problem that you have is that there are lovely parts of that. I mean, specifically, I must admit that mine is very Costa Blanca focused. But, you know, there are people who by owning a property, yes, they charge rent for the property, but they don't charge. They're not having their property rented to locals as a general rule. There are Brits, Germans, Dutch who own property and they let it for holiday lets, short-term lets, you know, a couple of weeks here and there. And what that actually does is it drives money into the local economy. So yes, they've bought a property, they're letting it to somebody, maybe from one of their friends or what have you, but that's driving massive, massive financials into that local economy. Now that can be through gardening, through builders, through maintenance, through the pool companies looking after the pools, and you know, a lot of these roles that are played in property in Spain are one-man bands. And to have these small jobs, you know, take a pool maintenance chap, well, you know, he might look after 20 or 30 pools around a village or a town, and that's his livelihood. So Brits and Dutch and German, French, what have you, they are actually supporting those local economies by owning property. And a lot of these properties have been built over the more recent years. So those properties are then driving construction in, and that's jobs as well. Yeah. And the majority of Spaniards, unless they're within the fishing communities of these coastal towns, they do live out away from the coast and they travel to the coastal resort for work. You know, coastal resorts through the winter really do quieten down and really do have, you know, quite a lot of restaurants close and but that's just the nature of it. And it does frustrate me really when you have people who really think that they shouldn't allow out of towners to buy property. I think it becomes very different when we're talking. I don't even remember last year there was a huge uproar about, I think we covered it as well, didn't we? About student lets and how there was a lot of property in the UK that's being bought as a profiteering exercise for student lets. So, and also that comes with build to rent as well. But all of this becomes a big negative when you're trying to allow people to buy properties in towns, cities in the UK where there are a need for education and things like that. That does limit things like tourism. But tourism in Spain drives a massive, massive amount of money into those communities for a very condensed period, you know, 6 months of the year practically. And I refer to people who are maybe in the fishing communities or who are in the agricultural communities, and they live in very different situations to the luxury villas that we're talking about for people buying these second homes.
Yeah, now don't laugh. I'm going to have a go at pronouncing the name of the vice president of that particular area, Juan Pedro Ilanes, who said, "This is not about banning foreigners, but about stopping non-residents from buying up homes and making it impossible for young people on the islands to afford rental places." Now, I mean, you know, the slight echoes, very sort of tenuous echoes of the Whitby story that we covered last year as well, I think, you know, in the sense of, like you say, pricing local people out of the market. But yeah, this is obviously complicated by the elements that you've said.
Yeah, I think it's probably a bit of, being honest, it's a bit of media spin to make it sound like, you know, we're doing that. I honestly can't see how you can prevent that happening and then not survive as a town. Yeah, Whitby slightly different because they do, you know, you do want people to be in the UK, that, you know, there are jobs, there are permanent jobs. It's not, Whitby's not a tourism hotspot like, say, Benidorm might be, or, you know, I appreciate that slight exaggeration when we are talking about, you know, in Mallorca here. But, you know, we have to say that having, it's a short-sighted view for a mayor to be trying to ban outsiders. Yeah,
yeah. There you have it. Whitby sneezed and Spain caught a cold. Simo, let's extend a warm Right Move property podcast thanks to all our guests and the contributors who've just been brilliant this month. And do I need to get you some sort of a Lilo or small dinghy before we record next time?
A sou'wester might be more appropriate.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And one of those windproof umbrellas, because, you know, you just never know. Thank you for that. We will catch up next time.
10-4, JP.
Selling, buying, investing. Are you making the right move?